Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders to kick this one off. Just to let everybody know, the OBT rehousing video is live. We put it up this weekend. I've been kind of really excited about putting that one up because it was one that we had planned on doing when we were in the old house, and I decided to hold off and wait because I wanted to put it in a nice enclosure when we got it here, and I'm glad I did. It's, you know, it was one of those ones I really wanted it to go well because I've seen so many of the disaster videos, OBT rehousings, on YouTube. There's still new ones out there every time you turn around, and I really wanted to set a good example of how these guys are not necessarily the demons everybody makes them out to be. And it did go well so far. The response to the video has been excellent. I've noticed a lot less of the comments talking about what little demons they are and everything, because last time I put the video, an OBT video up, the majority of the comments were people talking about how nasty theirs were, which I get. And I get that there are ones out there that are not particularly well-behaved or more defensive than others. I totally understand that. But I also think it's gotten to be a thing to kind of brag about how nasty your OBT was. And some of the people didn't even have them. They just talked about how demonic they were because that's what they had heard. The majority of people talking about how demonic they were ones that didn't have them. The people that kept them were the ones coming on saying, yeah, mine's actually not that bad. So again, it's always the truth of the matter is always somewhere in the middle. They're not all little sweethearts that I would go out there handling by any stretch of the imagination, but they're not all the aggressive monsters that people make them out to be. So for people that wanted to check those out, I've already run into a couple people over there that listened to the podcast that came over to check out the video. And thanks so much. And hopefully we'll be able to change some attitudes toward these guys. Because again, I get being careful. I get making sure that people new to the hobby understand that this isn't just like picking up a G. rosea, a rosehair tarantula, that they have that potential to bite. They will use it if they feel threatened. And somebody that hasn't been in the hobby for a while, chances are they're going to do stuff that could, you know, set the spider off, have the spider become defensive, and hence end up at the end of those fangs. I totally understand that. But I also think we might have done too good of a job to a point because a lot of people just have sworn them off completely because they think they're the most evil things on the planet, which is kind of sad. So glad we're able to change that up. For our main topic today, it might be a little short one because what kind of got me thinking about this was the fact that Billy and I went to the old house today to do some work and I tweaked my back out. I have a terrible back overall, and this was a little muscle on the side that's just giving me some trouble. But while we're driving back home, I was thinking about the fact that if God forbid, you know, we've talked about this before, if anything happens to me, what would I do with the tarantulas? Like, granted, a little injury, like here and there, I messed up my shoulder for a little while, but I was still able to get the, you know, the cages down, the enclosures down. Knock on wood, as bad as my back has gotten, it's never impeded my ability to care for my tarantulas. But I'm getting to that age where things go wrong, you know, surgeries come into play. Who knows? You know, you don't want to think about bad things, but you do have to plan ahead. What happens when something goes wrong and we're not able to tend to our collections for long periods of time? So the topic today is kind of having that emergency plan. And I'm talking through this one myself. This isn't even one. I've got some notes as I was sitting here before we got ready to go that I started writing down about ideas that I'd like to talk about and things that I would do. But this is more me brainstorming with you guys. I haven't thought this all out. And as a matter of fact, I have a couple of the things that we're going to talk about here today I'm kind of guilty of and don't have ready should something happen to me. We've talked about, Billy and I have talked about this before, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll do it, but I haven't done it. So what are some of the things you need to think about just in case there comes a point where you're not able to access your collection for a while? And it doesn't necessarily have to be a physical ailment. It doesn't necessarily have to be somebody's in the hospital. I know I've spoken to people before that right around when COVID hit, got stuck out of the country or got stuck in another state and quarantined, and they weren't able to get home when they originally planned, so their collection was sitting there for a little while longer. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be a medical emergency. Plus, one thing I want people to realize is that the majority of spiders you keep can probably go 2-3 weeks or so with no issue, as long as, you know, the moisture dependent ones have moist substrate, if they have full water dishes, if they've been fed, if you've been feeding them, you know, with any type of regularity, they should be perfectly fine. It's not like, God forbid, if you have like a hamster or a ferret or a dog or a cat or some type of furry vertebrate at home, they're going to need obviously immediate attention, immediate care. With tarantulas, you can let them go for a while. I often counsel people who are looking to get into tarantulas and they like to go on vacation. They're like, listen, I like to go on vacation for a week or so. What am I going to do with my spiders? And I'm like, just make sure they got water ahead of time. They should be perfectly fine. So the good news is for smaller situations, like I have had a situation once where I did tweak out my shoulder to the point where I wasn't able to use it. I was trying to give it a little break. And It made working with the tarantulas a little difficult. I was able to take a week off. You know, I was going in spot watering and stuff like that, but I didn't have to do every single thing in the collection. So that's something that, you know, that's important to consider. However, you never know. God forbid something happens and you're not going to be able to do it for, you know, several weeks to a month, maybe even more. What do you do? Well, I think first and foremost, what you need to do with your collection, and this is the one I'm guilty of, is make sure everything is labeled correctly. I would say 98% of my tarantulas, I'll go 95, how's that? It'll make myself look even worse. 95% of my tarantulas are actually labeled and appropriately labeled, but there are a few there that, like, I know a couple of them I did rehousings and the label maker wasn't working, or I think I ran out of the sticker for it, or the actual material for it. And I just never got around to labeling them. Now I look at it, I know which species they are. I know it's the T. blondes. I know that, you know, there's no issue with me. However, if somebody were to have to come and take care of my collection, like Billy, and this is what we joked about, those aren't labeled correctly, she would not immediately recognize them. She's, you know, been working with me for a while, but she's not at that point yet where she can open up an enclosure and go, oh, that's a T. blondie. So making sure that your guys are updated, that the labels are correct. If you're like me and you sometimes use different labels and you don't pull the old labels off, then you maybe want to go back and pull the old labels off, because you don't want a situation where they pull down an enclosure. And I have some of these where there's a label on one side that says G. porteri, there's a label on the other side that says P. murinus. Now, obviously we took two extreme examples there, but I do have situations where one label is a totally different species behavior wise than the other one. So always make sure your labels are good to go, that they are accurate, that they accurately represent the tarantula that is kept in that enclosure, because that's going to help for the next step, which is obviously having somebody that can come and help you if this situation should arise where you're not able to care for your tarantulas. Now, for those of us with spouses or significant others that are into the hobby, or at least, you know, interested enough in the hobby that they're around when we do feedings and they've, you know, interacted with the spiders a little bit, that's probably your go-to. Obviously, if anything were to happen to me, it would be Billy and Roan would be the two that would probably take over. Roan's my 17-year-old son who knows enough about him and a big hefty kid that could help with, you know, taking things down off shelves and stuff. And Billy knows enough about them from working with me that she would get the general gist. She's seen me do the watering a million times. She's seen me do the feeding. She's seen me pull out boluses, things of that nature. Billy would be my go-to in that situation, which even having her here and helping out with so many, obviously, videos and rehousings and feedings and whatnot, it would still be a huge undertaking for her. I'm sure she would be feeling overwhelmed at first when she looked in that room and saw how many tarantulas I had, but she's a go-getter, so I'm sure she'd figure some system out where she made sure she got them all. But if you have a significant other that is interested in the hobby, now this doesn't obviously work for those out there who have significant others that are tolerant of the hobby but show no interest in it. And I've spoken to many people over the years that, you know, their significant other is like, hey, you can have these in here. I don't want anything to do with them. I want them in a separate room. I want them in that closet over there. I don't think there's a lot of situations like that, but it's something you need to think about. If that's the case and your go-to person isn't going to be the person that's living with you, then you're going to want to find a friend or somebody else that's actually able to do this for you. And I know this is one of those things we start thinking about, and I think with some people it's going to be problematic because, like, who am I going to get over there? And I don't know. I mean, I've had people ask me before, and this is a question I've waited to kind of deal with, who should I get to help me with them if something should go wrong? I don't know. If you got a best buddy, if you got somebody that's been over your house. I know a friend of mine, he had a buddy of his that used to come over. They used to come over and have beers and stuff and hang out in the house, play video games. And he knew enough of the spiders that when he did have a situation, I think he crashed a quad or something and he was laid up for a little bit, his buddy knew enough about him to go over and that he could coach him. So in a situation where you're maybe not able to physically do the work yourself, like you're not able to take down the enclosures and do everything, you've hurt your back, you've hurt your arm, you've hurt your legs, you're in a wheelchair, you're bedridden for a bit. But if it's a situation where obviously you're cognizant, you're awake, that's a little bit different because you could probably coach somebody through it. So in the first scenario we're doing, you're laid up, you're not able to, because I got another one later on that we're going to talk about. You're laid up, but you're just not able to do the physical work. You can have somebody that you can coach through. Obviously, they can come in, they can bring something to you. I mean, hopefully you can get somewhere near the room. I think that's easy enough, but it shouldn't be a person that's never worked with tarantulas before or at least been exposed to them. I think that's an important part of this because you don't want somebody that's been like, you know, they know you have them, they've seen them, but they've never really been around them, because it could be incredibly overwhelming. I know a lot of us out there have really large collections, and you know, it's one thing to watch your buddy feed two or three tarantulas on the dinner table while you're having a couple beers. It's another thing for you to have to go through his collection of 50 and do them all yourself. That's a huge step up. So make sure, and here's how I would think about it, honestly. Like, if you can't think of anybody right now, start thinking of somebody just in case. Start trying to figure out that person that you could be like, hey, you know what? If anything were to happen, could I count on you to do this? And I know that's probably an interesting conversation to have if the person hasn't showed a lot of interest, but I think the trick is to know that you've, even just for peace of mind, to know that you have somebody there that you can at least coach through taking care of your animals should you be laid up for a long stretch of time. So number one, make sure that you have somebody you can coach through. Obviously, make sure everything's labeled correctly. And now if you have your person that you can coach through it, if they know the basics about tarantulas, you're good. If it's somebody that you haven't really gotten into some of the specifics, some things I think you should probably go over with them and maybe even leave them a little, we'll talk about this in a minute, like a little emergency binder with some information in it. They should know the difference between old worlds and new worlds. You don't want to spook them out. You don't want a situation where they're, you know, freaked to work with them, but they should have a general idea that these are trend. Be careful with all of them, but these ones over here specifically, you're going to want to be extra careful with. And you'd rather, you know, better safe than sorry. You'd rather them be extra cautious with the entire collection than just lackadaisical about it. They're plucking out water dishes. They're pulling out boluses. They're reaching in with their hands, not realizing that it's your HMAC tank. You want to be very careful to make sure that they recognize the difference between old worlds and new worlds. You want to make sure they recognize the ones that are moisture dependent, because those are the ones you're going to want to make sure. Those are the ones you might have problems with. I wouldn't worry about the majority of my collection if I wasn't able to get up here into the room for a little bit. The ones I would worry about are slings, again, because they can dry out, and my moisture dependent species, again, because those water dishes could dry out, the substrate could dry out, and I could be left with the spider in conditions that are not appropriate for the spider. They could end up with a bad molt. They could end up with them being dehydrated and dying. So you want to make sure they recognize the difference between them. Now, one way to make sure, again, part of this is just educating them on it. A crash course, you know, if it's somebody that you're looking at that doesn't have a lot of experience, you're going to want to do a little crash course just so they feel comfortable with the idea of it. Again, not to freak them out, but so that they're aware. The other thing is when you label the tanks, I know some people have very sophisticated and labels on their tanks that have like the species name, the common name, and then some information about arid, dry, semi-dry, arboreal, fossorial, terrestrial, things of that nature. And I've seen people, you know, do some really nice printed labels up. If you have those, you're probably in really good shape. That's going to be fantastic. That's going to help out whoever is working with your tarantulas immensely, because now they look at that enclosure, they go, all right, I don't know what HMAC means, but it says here that this one can stay rather dry. I just need to fill the dish, and I should keep my fingers away from it because it's an old world. That's going to have all the information they need. Or this one here is an O. velocipes. It is, again, it's an old world species, and it's also moisture dependent, so I need to make sure that I make it rain, make sure I fill the water dish. That's great information for those of us, or those of you that have that type of label on your enclosures. A lot of us do not. A lot of us have labels that are basically the scientific name. Sometimes it's scientific name and common name. For my tarantulas, I don't have any common names on them. It's only the scientific names. And in those instances, you're going to want to make sure to come up with some type of system so that the person can easily recognize. Because even if you leave them a little binder, and we'll talk about that in a moment, a little emergency binder with some information in it, you want them to be able to go to the enclosures, do what you need to do, and get it done as quickly and as safely as possible. So one thing to think of is they have those little circle stickers you can use. I would get a set of colored circle stickers. I would use, for the ones that are old worlds, I would take a red circle and stick it in the corner of the, on the corner of the cage to identify that it is an old world species, a very quick visual reminder or indicator for people that are taking care of your tarantulas. I think that would help a great deal. So now when they pick up the cages, they just know I got to be a little extra extra careful, a little extra cautious with this one here. The other thing I would do is take the blue sticker. And for any tarantula that is moisture dependent, that requires that substrate to be moistened down periodically, that, you know, it's essential that that water dish is full, take that blue sticker, stick that on there. So now we have a situation where the person is walking around doing he's helping you out, or she's helping you out. And instead of having to go, all right, oh God, what is this one? They look right at the thing, they go, all right, it's blue. I need to make sure I make it rain. And obviously you're going to show them how to do this. And then red, it's an old world species, so I need to be very careful. I think that's a great way to basically quickly identify those species that they're going to have to be a little more cautious with or spend a little more time with. Now, if you have new world species that are problematic, so for example, say some of the folks have Formictopus species that will sit right out in the open and they get a little nasty when somebody opens the enclosure, you could always put one of those red circles on there. Again, just to give them a heads up that this is a spider you don't want to trifle with. This is a spider you want to be extra cautious around. So that's, if you have the labels, great. If you don't have the labels with all this information on it, I think that sticker system would work great. You could also, I've seen, now again, wouldn't look particularly sightly, but I've seen people that use post-it notes, and they put post-it notes on the corner of the enclosures with information like the molts and whatnot. You can always leave post-it notes and stuff. It just wouldn't look as good, I don't think, as subtle as some of the other things you could use, like an actual label with all the information or those little round stickers. So now we've identified our go-to person. We've made sure that our collection is appropriately labeled. And I will flat out admit this is something that I need to do myself. So it's kind of a mental checklist for me too. But everything's labeled. Now you're going to want, obviously, if it's somebody, you know, it's your wife or husband or girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever, hopefully it's just a matter of they've already have some experience in it. But I think a good thing to do would be to have the person kind of do a trial run with you a couple times. Sit there and have them with you when you're actually doing feedings and maintenance. Now, somebody that's taking care of your collection for short term should not have to worry about rehousings. That shouldn't even be, I wouldn't even bother with that. That's something that you need practice to do. I would not set somebody up. I would not ask Billy to rehouse something on her own at this point, but I would have them with you and have them practicing and doing some feedings, some waterings, making it rain, you know, the basics, and show them how that works. You don't want a situation, now obviously you have moisture dependent species, you don't want a situation where somebody comes in and just dumps a gallon of water in there and floods the whole thing. You want to show them how it works, what to look for, give them a good idea of how to go about it. So, all right, here we go. We're going to do my P. crassipes. First thing I'm going to do is go in, I'm going to pluck the water dish out and clean it and fill it back up. Be sure to watch for the spider at all times. Be sure to use tongs when you're reaching into the enclosure. Next, I'm going to go ahead and drop a couple crickets in for it. Next, after that, I'm going to go through and I'm going to make it rain. I'm going to take my little water bottle here with all the holes in the top and I'm going to squirt just a little bit, show them, not go overboard. Give them a chance to practice it themselves so that you can maybe correct anything. Like if you see somebody shooting in with their hand, nope, always going to use the tongs. Or if you see somebody, you know, not paying attention to the burrow when they're reaching into a fossorial species, you want to make sure to remind them, you always want to pay attention to the burrow when you reach in there, be careful. But anyway, you want them to have some practice doing it. So I think it would be prudent if this is something you're thinking about, if this is something that you're planning for, to make sure that whoever your go-to person is has a chance to do this stuff by yourself. Even if it's a husband or spouse that sat there with you a bunch of times before and watched it, watching it is one thing. When you're in charge of it, it's totally different. The nerves are going to be jacked up. You're taking care of somebody else's pet that you know they obviously care a great deal for, somebody else's pets, and you want to make sure you do it correctly. So there's the stress of being afraid you're doing it incorrectly. There's the stress of, well, they just informed me some of these spiders could put a hurting on me if I get bit. You want to make sure they're comfortable. So any point, and you know, as much time as you can spend with them, try to spend some time just going through it. And again, I think it should be something where they obviously aren't going to be as good at it as you are or as we all are, because we do it every single day, but enough so that they feel comfortable with just the basics of cleaning those water dishes, dumping some moisture in there, and feeding the spiders. And speaking of feeding the spiders, that's a big one too, because I think a lot of us take for granted that we are used to working with the creepy crawlies that come with feeding tarantulas, the crickets, the roaches, the mealworms, the superworms, whatever you may be using them. So having them develop some skills with working with them, or at least having them used to working with those animals, recognizing what sizes to put in there, would be a good place to start. I know for me, when I'm feeding them, I know exactly which ones are getting the large crickets. I know which ones I'm busting out the red runner roaches, the smaller roaches for. I know which ones I have to pre-kill. That's something that you might want to spend some time with. Now, obviously, it's not going to be perfect. I'm thinking right now, I'm looking over at my slings that would have to be fed, and some of them will take live small prey. Some of them I still have to pre-kill. I would probably have a situation where if I was not able to take care of them, I would just tell or inform whoever was doing it for me, Billy in this case, that just feed them all pre-killed. It just makes it easier. Just take a little item, you know, get some mealworms, get a cricket or something, cut it up, drop a little piece in there for them. Don't bother with dropping in live ones because I have some of them that will not take down the live prey and they would be left in with the animal. I have other ones that will, you know, it would just be too difficult. So try to streamline things. Now, we talked earlier about having a binder. I think it would be a good situation. Now, obviously, this would take time. I thought about doing this a while ago, and I never got around to doing it. I was going to print out some of my stuff and put in it, but having a binder that just goes through some of the basics, again, some of the stuff we've talked about here, how to feed them, what size to feed them, anything you can think of to include in the binder that would help somebody that was taking care of your tarantulas. Maybe a little, some notes for people with smaller collections. This would be a little difficult with people with larger collections, but if you have a list of the actual spiders that you have in your collection, maybe make a little spreadsheet or a little chart so that whoever's taking care of them has a name of the spider and some notes about it. So then you could get even more personalized. So again, we want it to be quick. We don't want them to spend a lot of time and have to do a lot of extra work when they're feeding them. But for some people, they might appreciate the fact that they can open up this book and go, okay, this is his G. porteri. It's rather laid back, drop in one cricket, put in some water, and we don't have to do that again for a month. And then maybe have a little box after it where they could put any notes they wanted to about when they fed it or anything they observed, just so that you're aware what went on when you were not able to access your collection. Anything to make it easier. And again, we're thinking through this together here, and I'm trying to think of what I would include, but it would be the old world, new world stuff, just to give people a heads up. The idea, you know, little warnings about make sure you use tongs every time you reach into the enclosures. Things of that nature, how much food to give each one. You know, I think that the easiest thing to do would just be one cricket for everything instead of having somebody dump in two or three or whatever, because I can picture a situation where somebody goes to feed your spiders and they just start dropping in gobs of crickets. We don't want that. So maybe just one cricket a pop, and then a place where they could take little notes. Anything you could put in there that would help them out. A little thing about molting. If you come in and see that my tarantula is on its back, it is not dead, don't freak out. It's molting. Situations, things like that, to just kind of make it so that the person could review it before they actually take care of the spiders. I would probably also include some information about the fact that they don't need to be fed every day. That, you know, again, you're going to go over all this stuff, but you want this to be as simple as possible for the person who's going above and beyond to help you out, because we see it as, you know, this is our happy place. This is when we go into our tarantula rooms or we're working out with our tarantulas, wherever it may be. You're calm, you are relaxed, you enjoy doing this. You have to remember that even somebody that's shown some interest in your hobby, there's going to be a lot of extra stress surrounding this. This is not going to be like when we go up there, like, if I have a bad day at work, I come home, I feed some spiders, I use some water. It's all automatic for me now. It's not going to be automatic for that person. So you want to make sure that he or she is well equipped to feel as comfortable as they can while they do you this enormous solid of taking care of your collection. Now, if we're talking about in the situation here before that maybe you're laid up for a bit, you can't do the actual physical work, so the person can come in your house and ask you questions. The book would be more for a situation where you're not able to communicate with them as much as you like. Maybe if you've unfortunately been hospitalized, maybe you're, whatever it may be. Again, we don't want to be depressing about this, but it's something to think about. You're in a situation where you're not able to give them day-to-day guidance. So one thing that might come up if you're under the weather for a while or unable to deal with the tarantulas for a while, something to think about would be to have like a gift card or some money stashed away in there and a place to get feeder insects in case you ran out. Because again, a lot of people keep their own feeder insects. And in that case, you just tell them, all right, you're going to use the roaches over there. You're going to drop them in. That's easy enough. But for people that go out and buy crickets, and there are still a lot of us that go out and we'll buy feeder insects every once in a while, once a week, once a month, whatever it may be, having something in there for that person so they don't have to pay out of pocket. Hey, if you run out of crickets or whatever, there is a 40 spot in there. Go to this pet store and get some crickets. Again, things to think about just in case you're in a situation where you're not able to get to them for a while. So again, in a perfect world, it would be somebody that currently lives with us. That would be the easiest situation. They know you. They know your animals. They've been around them probably a lot more than anybody else would. But it's never a perfect world. You never know when something like this is going to happen. So again, I do think this is something, and I've been asked this in the past, it is something you want to give some thought to if you're developing or putting together a large collection. Knowing, again, just a recap, knowing who your go-to person is going to be that's going to take care of them, and know, have that person be familiar or be aware that they're going to serve in that role ahead of time. The last thing you want to do is be in a situation where you're, you know, held up, something's happened, and you're frantically trying to get a hold of friends and go, please, could you go over and take care of my tarantulas? It's something you want to identify this person. You want to have them spend some time over there going through the basics. You want to bring them over when you do some feedings, show them how you do the feedings, the cleanings, the waterings, what's, you know, all that stuff. You want to give them some background knowledge. You want to teach them the fact, the difference between old worlds and new worlds, and the fact that you don't play with your tarantulas. You keep your hands out of the way, use tongs, all that stuff. Put together a binder, put some information in the binder, all the stuff you go through with them, put it in the binder, some printouts, you know, type some notes out, whatever, hand, it doesn't have to be fancy, but just something that they can refer to if they have a question. And then, you know, make sure, prep ahead of time, make sure all your stuff is correctly labeled, because the last situation, you know, the last thing you want to have happen in a situation like this is a person comes over and half your collection hasn't been labeled because you know which species are in there, but they're not going to. So that's something that I got to work on as well. I'm looking around now, looking at some of the ones I got to go make labels for as soon as I'm done here. But again, there's no, I even thinking through this now, I'm sure after I get done, I'll think of a couple more things that we could have put in here. But it's, I don't think, for many of us, it would be a very difficult situation regardless if we did all this. We love working with our spiders. We have ways that we work with our spiders. It would cause some anxiety knowing that we weren't able to get to them. We had somebody else do them. And it wouldn't be perfect. You got to figure whoever's going to be doing this is going to be trying to do something that you do, you know, at least once a week, we would say, and they might have only done it three times. It's not going to be a perfect situation. However, if we can plan ahead and put some things in a place that make this a little bit easier, then maybe the person taking care of your tarantulas can relax and be a little less stressed out. You can relax a bit and a little stressed out and heal up or whatever the situation may be. Come back if you're trapped somewhere else. Who knows what the situation might be. But it would be a lot better to have that planned out ahead of time, discuss that ahead of time, and have that battle plan should it happen. So again, I don't come this time with all the answers. It's something that I'm working through. For this is one of these podcasts where this isn't just for you guys, it's for me as well, because I was thinking about it today driving over. I'm driving back from our other house and my back spasmed a couple times, and I'm like, man, it's gonna be a long day. And then I had some tarantula stuff I had to do today that I'm not going to be able to do, and my mind got to thinking, what would happen if I wasn't able to do it for the long run? What would happen, God forbid, that I had surgery or something and I was going to be out for a while? Who's going to do that? And who's going to be able to take that over? And I was like, all right, obviously Billy, but there's still some things you guys have seen. I mean, anybody that's watched my videos knows how closely she works with me with all this stuff. There would still be a lot to go over. So as I was thinking about it, I was like, you know what? We're going to think this out through the podcast, because what better way? So I do hope for those of you out there listening that have been in situations like these, please share how you dealt with it. Who took care of them? What did you do? Were there any things we missed here that you could do ahead of time? I'm sure there's other stuff that you could do and prepare for that I missed. Let's talk about it a little bit, because I think it's something you don't always think about. I know that, you know, there's people, a lot of friends of mine have dogs and stuff. It's easy enough to have somebody come over and take care of your dog. What do? You feed it, you know, once a day, twice a day, depending on your feeding schedule. Make sure it has clean water. Maybe take it for a walk. It's done. Everybody knows how to do that because most everybody has dogs. Throw spiders in the mix. Totally different ball game. So for those of you out there that have had exotics that have had a situation where you weren't able to deal with them, again, we're specifically talking about tarantulas, but I think it would fit with just about everything. Let us know what you did. Let us know how it worked out. And if you can think of anything that we didn't include here, feel free to, you know, chime in, let us know, let me know so we can, you know, cover it a little bit in the next podcast to make sure that people have the information they need. But again, you never want to think about stuff bad happening. But I think when you're, when you have a huge collection of animals that require care, that are dependent on you to take care of them, to make sure they stay healthy, it's almost, I would say it's irresponsible not to give some consideration on what would happen if you weren't able to care for them. So that will probably do it with this one. A little shorter this week. I do some long ones, I do some short ones. This is a good time to stop it because it's the end of a topic. And honestly, earlier today when my back was really barking, I wasn't even sure I was going to be able to do this because when I sat down, I was like, oh God, this isn't good. But it's feeling a little bit better now, so I'm going to try to go move around so it doesn't stiffen up. and hopefully it'll be back to normal. I do have some feeding I have to do, but I might have to put it off to tomorrow. It's getting old, not a lot of fun. So that'll probably do it for this one. As always, you can find me at tomsbigspiders.com. You can find me on Tom's Big Spiders on YouTube. Again, for anybody that wants to take a peek at my OBT or see the actual video of the rehousing, I know I went over it in the podcast. You can go there. I think it went very, very well overall. I was so happy it went well. I just wanted to make sure that I could show people that they don't all have to be the debacles you often see on YouTube. I do think a lot of that is done for effect, and it drives me absolutely insane because there's nobody needs that in the hobby. We want to see good examples of how to work with them. We don't want to see you jack up a spider so you can get more views. So that'll do it for this one, guys. As always, stay safe, and we'll catch you all next time.